believe assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
And welcome to the show, everyone. We've got a pretty complete, pretty involved show put together for you today. Flying under the radar is the 10th Amendment movement, and it's beginning to pick up steam. The 10th Amendment is basically state sovereignty. All right, let me actually read it to you. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. So give state sovereignty. Millions of Americans have been watching with horror as the Obama administration continues to implement its own version of change. Change that involves an unprecedented, systematic devolution of power to the federal government in direct contravention of the U.S. Constitution. From the pending takeover of about 17% of the economy under the auspice of health care reform, to the government takeover and subsequent ownership of automobile companies, to the unconstitutional interference in the formerly private market under the rubric of stimulating the economy, not to mention the proposed cap and trade legislation, which would give the federal government pretty much unlimited powers of taxation and regulation under the guise of saving the planet. Thank you, Al Gore. Totally ignored by elected officials of both parties is the 10th Amendment of the Constitution, which I just read to you very clearly. Many Americans don't agree with the left's idea of a living constitution, arguing that the intent of the founders should govern the interpretation and application of the Constitution, not the whimsical and politically motivated present-day politicians. And largely unreported by today's major media, they're starting to stand up to the federal government. To date, 37 states have introduced sovereignty resolutions asserting their state sovereignty rights under the 10th Amendment. Just earlier this month, Louisiana became the 7th state, joining Alaska, North Dakota, South Dakota, Oklahoma, Idaho, and Tennessee to officially adopt a resolution affirming their sovereignty. These states are putting the federal government on notice that politicians in Washington's do not have the right. In fact, they don't have the power under the Constitution to continue to impose their increasingly onerous federal mandates on sovereign states. Some states, with Arizona leading the way, are even going a little further. Under Arizona's Health Care Freedom Act, which was passed by the Arizona State Legislature earlier this month, a voting initiative will be placed on the 2010 ballot that, if passed, will allow Arizona to opt out of any federal health care plan under the 10th Amendment. Following Arizona's leads, five other states, Indiana, Minnesota, New Mexico, North Dakota, and Wyoming, are considering several initiatives to opt out of federal health care by their 2010 ballots. This even before Congress has created the program. Arizona is also preparing for the misnamed climate bill that passed the House this month with 8 Republican votes, mind you. The Arizona State Senate voted 19-10 to approve a bill banning the Department of Environmental Quality from enacting or enforcing measures with language pertaining to climate change. We've got more continuing on about this after the break. Stay tuned.
Rule 1, assume it's loaded. Rule 2, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3, listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, recapping just from the last segment a little bit. Arizona is preparing for the misnamed climate bill that passed the House of Representatives this month with 8 Republican votes on it. The Arizona State Senate voted 19-10 to approve a bill banning the Department of Environmental Quality from enacting or enforcing measures with language pertaining to climate change within the boundary of the state of Arizona. Other states are stepping up to the plate and asserting their state's sovereign right under the Second Amendment, a right that guarantees the right of the people to keep and bear arms. On July 6th of 2009, Florida introduced the Firearms Freedom Act, which seeks to provide that, quote, that special firearms, firearms accessories, and ammunition for personal use manufactured in the state are not subject to federal law or regulation, end quote, in the state of Florida. Increasingly, the representatives we the people have elected to preserve and protect our rights are ignoring the clear, unequivocal language of the Constitution. Our politicians seem aware of the fact that the Constitution does not include congressional power to override state law. In fact, the power our representatives are now accruing to the federal government was expressly voted down not once, but several times. During the constitutional ratification process, James Madison drafted the Virginia Plan, which advocated a very strong federal government. It proposed, among other things, giving Congress legislative authority and a veto over states' laws. Each of Madison's proposals was soundly defeated. Our founders clearly intend, it was very, very apparent, that their intent was vesting all powers in the states, but with a few listed exceptions, and they're in the Constitution. Ever since 1938, when FDR used the occasion of the Great Depression to drastically expand the scope of federal government, there's a famous case called Wickard versus Filburn regarding that, using an absurd reading of the Commerce Clause. This unconstitutional taking of power by the central government, by the feds, has gone virtually unchanged until now. Though the media has ignored these efforts, we the people are starting to fight back via our state and local representatives. Politicians need to be reminded that our Constitution is still in effect. And Americans need to be reminded that just because some believe the trendy notion that our Constitution is a living, breathing document doesn't make it so. Now, within those Tenth Amendment powers, within the states, Montana got a letter from the ATF basically stating, you will respect our authority. This last Friday, a letter went out to Tennessee, another went out to Montana, telling them that the ATF was overriding the state's Firearms Freedom Act that they passed under the 10th Amendment and would continue to impose federal requirements and in disregarding of this new state laws. Okay, they've done it in Tennessee. They've done it in Montana. As a side note, you can hear for yourself just the utter lack of coverage on the development of any of this mainstream media outlets, newspapers, networks, websites. The time was a free press acted as a government watchdog. Now it's in bed with the government. Let me read this letter to you. All right. Open letter to all Montana federal firearms licensees dated July 16th, 2009. The purpose of this letter is to provide guidance on your obligations as a federal firearms licensee, FFL, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, ATF, is dedicated to your success in meeting your requirements as a federal firearms licensee. The following guidance is intended to assist you in accomplishing this goal. Now, keep in mind, in Minnesota, they passed a law that's supposed to take effect, I believe, at the beginning of 2010. That says any gun manufactured in the state of Minnesota, sold in the state of Minnesota, and intended to remain in the state of Minnesota, is exempt from any and all federal regulations. Meaning they don't have to have a serial number on it, they don't have to report it to the feds, they don't have to go through the 4473, none of that. Right? So that's what this letter is in regards to. The passage of the Montana Firearms Freedom Act, Montana House Bill 246, effective October 1st, 2009, okay, so there it is, has generated questions from industry members as to how this state law may affect them while engaging in a firearms business activity. The act purports to exempt personal firearms, firearms accessories, and ammunition manufacturing in the state, and which remain in the state, from most federal firearms laws and regulations. However, because the act conflicts with the federal firearms laws and regulations, federal law supersedes the act, and all provisions of the Gun Control Act and the National Firearms Act and their corresponding regulations continue to apply. You understand this? They're saying that federal law supersedes state law. That's what they're saying. As you may know, federal law requires a licensee to engage in the business of manufacturing firearms or ammunition or to deal in firearms even if the firearms or ammunition remain within the same state. All firearms manufactured by a licensee must be properly marked. Additionally, each licensee must record the type, model, caliber, or gauge and serial number of each firearm manufactured or otherwise acquired and date such manufacturing or other acquisition it was made. The information required must be recorded in the licensee's records no later than the seventh day following the date such manufacture or other acquisition was made. Firearms transactions, recorded in the NICS background checks must be conducted prior to disposition of firearms to unlicensed persons. These, as well as other federal requirements and prohibitions, apply whether or not the firearm or ammunition has crossed state lines. If you have any questions regarding the federal firearms laws and regulations, please contact your local ATF office. ATF works closely with the firearms industry and appreciates the important role the industry plays in combating violent crime. A listing of ATF phone numbers can be found at the following web address. Sincerely, Carson W. Carroll, Assistant Director, Enforcement Programs and Services. All right. So basically, they were told to go pound sand when it comes to this state law in both Tennessee and Missouri. All right. I'm sorry, Montana. So, in response to that, here's an open letter to Carson W. Carroll, Assistant Director of BATFE, by a guy by the name of Mike Vanderbogue. An open letter to Carson Carroll, Assistant Director at BATFE. Dear Carson, I am in receipt of a copy of your open letter to all Tennessee firearms licensees. Now, that was a mirror of the one I just read to you. Dated July 16th. I just have one question. I am not an FFL holder. I never wanted to put myself at the mercy of your unconstitutional bully boy agency whose malfeasance, misfeasance, perjuries, and deadly misadventures are legendary. I have observed firsthand your agency's ability to cow FFL holders into not fighting you in court when you violate your own rules. Your agency often pushes the line of what constitutes statutory compliance with the threat that they will come back with a raid party if the FFL holder doesn't knuckle under. Having my business, my livelihood, my family safety, and my life at the whim of brutal thuggery such as exemplified by Waco Jim Kavanaugh at the time of the Trader's Gun Shop raid here in Birmingham, or Jody Q's railroading of David Olufsen never interested me. Indeed, I never thought of becoming a firearms manufacturer before, but now that Tennessee has bravely followed Montana's lead in exercising their 10th Amendment right, and you have doubled the incentive by issuing your plainly unconstitutional threat, which itself an offensive stretch of the nostrils of all liberty-loving Americans, I wonder if you might answer this question. If I move to Tennessee and open up a firearms manufacturer, I like the name Weapon Shop of Isher, purporting all my components from within the state and selling only to Tennessee residents as per the Tennessee statute, what are you going to do to me? I am, after all, not one of the tame FFL holders you're used to bullying about. You may threaten them as you like. I suppose you're certainly used to doing that. As they have already made the fatal compromise by bringing you into your tyrannical system. But what will you do to me? Awaiting your reply with great anticipation, Mike Vonderbug, the alleged leader of a merry band of three percenters in Princeton, Alabama. P.S. Do make your answer timely in a timely fashion so I can begin lining up investors and hunting a suitable property in Tennessee to open my new business. All right. So what we've got is we've got the 10th Amendment. And the 10th Amendment has actually been read and interpreted many times that the state law supersedes federal law. And let me give you an example. If the federal government, say they set a law, and we're just going to take one for instance. Let's say that the federal government sets a law that says if you're going to drive on an interstate highway that we, the federal government, paid for, you cannot have a blood alcohol content greater than 0.10. The states can change it to 0.08. Therefore, the states supersede the federal authority. States can be more restrictive than the feds. So, in the ATF guy's letter, he actually misquoted. It is an unconstitutional interpretation. More about this when we return. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, live, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
Okay, we're going to move on to the next little bit here about the hysteria over the so-called assault weapons. Guys, I need you to understand that all this hype is intentional. Those behind it rely on media ignorance to spread public confusion. Here's a case in point. The violence policy instigator, Josh Sugarman, wrote the following. The weapon's menacing look, coupled with the public's confusion over fully automatic machine guns versus semi-automatic assault weapons, anything that looks like a machine gun is assumed to be a machine gun and can only increase the chance of public support for restrictions on these weapons. In addition, few people can envision a practical use for these guns, end quote. And you're right. You're absolutely right. You get stupid, you just get ignorant people, and they don't understand. And the thing is, you've used your media bias over so many years that they don't want to listen to the reasoning of it. Here's the practical purpose for what you would deem a quote-unquote assault weapon, shooting people. That's the practical purpose. The practical purpose of an AR-15, an AK-47, things of the like, the practical purpose is for shooting people. That's what they're designed and built for. I don't deny it. Nobody should deny it. It doesn't have a legitimate sporting purpose. It's not designed to have a legitimate sporting purpose. It really doesn't have a legitimate sporting purpose. What it does have is a purpose for defense, for self-defense, defense of the family, defense of one's nation. Defense against a tyrannical government. Read the Constitution. Read the Second Amendment. Read the Tenth Amendment. And read the writings of the Founding Fathers. I don't take an AR-15 hunting. Actually, that's not true. I have hunted with an AR-15 before. I told you the story once upon a time. On the island of Molokai in Hawaii, we went out shooting a bunch of feral goats that were just tearing up the vegetation in the hillside. The U.S. Army came out and said, look, if you guys that own this land don't handle these goats, we've been authorized by the governor's office to go up there in gunships and shoot these goats from the air. So that you can go up there and have a heyday, or we're going to go up there and have a heyday, but somebody's shooting these goats. So guess what we did? We helped them out. Had some friends. Went over there and got her done with an AR-15. It was, pardon the pun, a blast. With rare exceptions, these guns are for shooting people who would otherwise bring us harm or tyranny. That's what they're for. That's why I own them. That's why I train with them. Hopefully, I will never, ever be forced into using one. By the tyranny of my government, by the homicidal or nearly homicidal acts of another human being or a group of human beings, hopefully I'll never be forced to use it. Continuing. Now, what this results, it's called the whole Violence Policy Center and all this BS that Sugarman puts out there. Our calls to ban semi-automatic firearms because of convenience or appearance features, not because they function any differently from other semi-autos. That is one shot per press of the trigger. We get ignorant anti-gun politicians like, say, Carolyn McCarthy, calling for banning safety features like barrel shrouds, when she clearly doesn't even know what they are. And we get opportunists like Jersey City Police Chief Thomas Comey, read something about him, played a piece by him recently, who would extend the assault weapons definition to include pump action shotguns. Years ago, some members of the now defunct, the Lawyers Second Amendment Society, I think it was named, came up with a poster intended to highlight the absurdity of cosmetic gun bans, basically called How to Make an Assault Weapon. In South Africa, it's kind of interesting. They're actually making assault ATMs now, automated teller machines. They've had a rash of ATMs being blown up, not just taken or screwed into. They keep making the security tighter and tighter and tighter. But last year, nearly 500 ATMs were blown up in South Africa. So to combat robberies rather than putting people at risk, the Absa Bank is piloting a new ATM at 11 different locations that shoot pepper spray at potential thieves. This technology uses cameras to detect people tampering with the card slots. Another machine that ejects pepper spray to stun the culprit while police respond, their teams race to the scene. The machines still need a little bit of work because just recently an ATM malfunctioned and sprayed its surroundings during routine maintenance, however. If successful, the program will expand to ATMs throughout South Africa. So now they have assault ATMs. I wonder if they will try to have legislation banning assault ATMs. Because maybe they're going to look menacing. I wonder if they painted the ATMs black in color. If that would make a difference. By the way, I just want to shoot this out there. I'll probably say it again by the end of the show. There is a group out there called Sharp Shooters for Liberty. Guardians of Liberty, a Nation of Minutemen is their tagline. Go to sharpshootersforliberty.org. They have different programs, different events where you can go and actually go shooting. Again, sharpshootersforliberty.org. They call themselves Guardians of Liberty, a Nation of Minutemen. Have the riot of the day coming up, which will surprise you, in fact, when we return. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
37 states have shall issue concealed weapons permits. An additional 9 have may issue permits. Shall issue means if you can legally own and possess a handgun, you can apply for, go through the training, whatever each state may have, and get a concealed weapons permit. You, of course, you got to pay your fees. They're gonna. It's essentially a tax to exercise your right. The other 9 have may issue permits, such as California, Hawaii, where you have to do a mother may I. Do you have good cause and reason to be able to exercise a right given to you under the Second Amendment. I shouldn't say given to you, preserved. So a lot of states infringe on that by having a may issue. Two states, in the name of Illinois and Wisconsin, have no concealed carry law whatsoever. Now, Wisconsin has an open carry law. Illinois has no open carry law, no concealed carry law, and bans handguns in the city of Chicago, amongst others. So here's a little piece. Illinois police say concealed carry law would deter criminals. Now, I'm going to read this for you. Now, let me give you just a little tidbit of info. Oftentimes, when it comes to opening up concealed carry laws, police are the ones who are against it the most. California Assembly Bill 357 in the 2009 state legislature and their session was going to change, had it passed, California from a may issue into a shall issue. Who was a big lobbyist against it? Their Association of Chiefs and Sheriffs. Because the chiefs and sheriffs had 100% control over who in their jurisdiction was able to get a CCW. They didn't want to give up that power. Imagine that. This story out of Peoria, Illinois. Talk of bringing concealed carry legislation to Illinois gives many residents a fear of the unknown. Several police chiefs and other personnel say putting fear into the minds of criminals, the ones on the street, is also one of the biggest arguments for allowing concealed carry. If you're not sure if a guy has a gun, you may not try to do something to him that you might otherwise try to get away with, said Peoria Police Officer Troy Skaggs, president of the Peoria Police Benevolent Union. It's the fear of the unknown, says Troy. Illinois and Wisconsin are the only two states without some type of concealed carry law. In February, the Illinois Sheriff's Association passed a resolution supporting a concealed carry law in Illinois with several conditions in place. Then in May, Peoria Mayor Jim Ardis expressed public support for Peoria becoming a test city for statewide legislation that would allow people to carry guns in a responsible way. During a recent 10-week stint at the FBI's National Academy, which brought 250 worldwide law enforcement executives to Quantico, Virginia, Peoria Police Chief Settingsguard said, quote, "Everyone I spoke to was in favor of concealed carry," end quote. Well, if that's true, then why are all the organizations against it? Well, because they're generally represented by other lobbyists, professional lobbyists, who knows, maybe they take a little bit of money away. You know, maybe they take a little bit of money away from the anti-gun crowd. That's what I'm guessing. They're on the take. On July 9th, 2009, the village of Bartonville and its police department passed a resolution in support of the ISA's recommendation for legalized concealed carry accompanied by stringent regulations of the process. Here's a quote. "We're supporting the Sheriff's Association with mandated regulations if the legislature decides to enact concealed carry in the state," said Bartonville Police Chief Brian Fegel. Fengel, F-E-N-G-E-L, said. He continued by saying, "They're already out on the streets. The gangbangers already have guns. This would allow law-abiding citizens to have them with mandatory training and background checks," end quote. Bartonsville resolution outlined provisions including the following. Permits being issued by a statewide agency to ensure consistency in evaluation and screening. Hear ye. That takes it out of the local area for police chiefs and sheriffs. Makes it a statewide event. The state of Utah, for example, all goes through the Utah BCI, Bureau of Criminal Investigation. It is a state deal. You don't have to do anything with the local police chiefs or sheriff. Proper instruction, gun safety and range training, demonstrated ability to fire accurately and safely, and requiring requalification annually. That's another thing they'd like to have in there. Annual requalification. I actually kind of like that. Because too many people buy a gun, get a CCW, put the gun away, and then never touch it again. And figure that in a few years, it's going to be like riding a bike. Let's pull the gun out and do it. The thing is, most people don't know how to shoot a gun in a defensive situation under stress in the first place. So it wouldn't even be like riding a bike. It'd be like having mom and dad on each side of your training wheel covered bike. Really, the process for most CCW shooting qualifications. Applications processed by sheriff's departments, including the ability to articulate why a permit is being denied. So they're looking at making it a shall issue state. You got to love that. Clear identification indicating if a person is allowed to carry in public. Okay, so that means a card. Others proposing concealed carry also mention the need to evaluate factors such as a criminal and mental health histories before issuing permits to carry a gun. Criminal and mental histories. Now, if you have a criminal or mental history, you can't have a gun. Therefore, if you apply and you do a background check, it's going to come up. So that's just anti-gunners running their jib and trying to get their 2 cents in there. Let's not let convicted felons and mental cases have guns either. Let's make sure that's in there. It's in there by default, you idiots. Here's a quote. We want to show our legislators we're in support of it. And we sent the resolution to the Senate and House and the people who represent us in the state government, Bengel said of the resolution. If the city of Chicago doesn't want it, then the rest of the state could do it. Because of Chicago's longtime opposition to concealed carry, many believe creating such legislation is a long shot. Because there's so many state legislators out of Chicago being such a populous area, everybody else in the entire state of Illinois gets the shaft. If Chicago wants their way, that's the way the whole state's going to go. Peoria area police chiefs mentioned the idea of Peoria, the county or the tri-county area, becoming a test ground for possible future statewide legislation. I'm very much in favor of concealed carry, said Settingbird. I believe it's to Peoria's benefit and Illinois' benefit. As he said, ideally it would be the whole state, but if all we carve out is a piece of central Illinois, I think we should do it. Okay, one possible problem with having concealed carry in just one city or one area of the state is the potential for spillover into nearby communities. Someone legally carrying a gun could, for example, cross over into Peoria Heights without realizing it. Ooh. It's a concern of mine because we're landlocked by Peoria, Peoria Heights Police Chief Dustin Sutton said. A lot of people go through the Heights, don't even realize they're in the Heights. There aren't distinctive boundaries. We get a lot of Peoria traffic, and most people don't even know where the boundaries are. Well, then why don't you get involved with it too, there, Colonel Klink? Even when the boundaries are clearer, such as crossing the Illinois River, I would imagine that there would be some lapses, says East Peoria Police Chief Ed Lapis. Concealed carry opponents point to the instance of breakdowns in which unqualified or unstable people attain the right to carry a gun, and proponents cite statistics showing reductions in certain types of crimes in the years after approving concealed carry legislation. Now, very important in that statement, it said attaining the right to carry a gun. You know what, jackass? They already have the right to carry a gun. That right can be abridged if they have committed certain types of crimes or have a history of mental disorder. Otherwise, they start off by having the right. Yet here's the deal. A lot of these anti-gun people, politicians, police chiefs, sheriffs, a lot of these people believe you've got to establish your right in order to carry a gun, which is all wrong. Nobody has to establish a right for anything. You don't establish a right to carry a gun. You are born with that right to self-defense. You get old enough to go by the laws and whatnot, 18 years old, you can get a gun. All right? Let's say you're 25 years old, you want to get a gun, and you want to carry a concealed. You don't have to establish a right to do it. You've got the right. On the other hand, would have to establish a reason to otherwise impede your right. And that might be by having a felony conviction, a conviction of domestic violence, or a history of mental disorder. So you establish that in your prior conduct or your prior being, be it through criminal negligence or through mental negligence. Your right can then be superseded. But you were born with the right. You don't have to establish a right. That's the big problem. The biggest misunderstanding that these anti-gunners really don't get. Here's another quote for you. I don't fear the average law-abiding citizen wanting to apply for a permit. That was by one of these police chiefs. I fear guns in the hands of criminals and felons, which they already have. The bottom line is, if somebody is considering breaking into a home or robbing a gas station or attacking someone on the street, if they think they might not survive that confrontation, a lot of people are going to think twice, as in a lot of criminals are going to think twice. Sutton said he supports concealed carry with the proper safeguards in place, but he worries about loopholes or becoming lax as years go by. If it's in place for a couple of years and then it becomes relaxed, it could be a nightmare, said Sutton. Sometimes, over time, you start to loosen your grip on something. When you're talking about firearms, there's no room for error. Loosen your grip. Loosen your grip is what this guy's saying, which means his grip would be his authoritative totalitarianism over deciding your rights when it comes to guns. These are the type of people that just have never read the Constitution, never understood it. You know, I believe every single person before graduating high school should have a class for an entire year, maybe as a junior or a senior, understanding. Actually, you know what would be great? I tell you what would be great. But the real money men that really run this country, the people behind the scenes, would probably never allow it. As a high school sophomore, right, 10th grade, 15, 16 years old, as a high school sophomore, everyone should have a year-long mandatory class on the Constitution and constitutional rights. Then in their junior and senior years, they should have a class where you actually get to debate the Constitution and get to debate rights and get to debate the interpretation of the Constitution. That should be mandatory in your junior year. And then you can take a supplemental course as a senior, as an elective, to take that even further. How about that? How about that, to really understand it? It'd be pretty difficult to lay a bunch of incredibly left-wing interpretations in the Constitution if the kids actually knew the Constitution, if they actually had a chance to read it and go through it, step by step, line by line, and then argue about it later. That would give the opportunity to have less people known as sheeple in this country. They wouldn't be so stupid, so ignorant as to what's going on and what the Constitution really means. And they should read that with writings of the Founding Fathers. How about that? Both before and after the Constitution was written and adopted. Okay, continuing on with this story. To me, the best statistics is 48 states have passed laws and no one has repealed it. There are 48 examples of states that have not become the Wild West. That was by Settings Guard, one of the police chiefs. Another police chief, Pappas, scoffs at the notion that concealed carry would flood the streets with additional guns. Rest assured, there are plenty of weapons out there, mostly in the hands of people who shouldn't have them or aren't licensed to have them. So what he's saying is, some people have them, but they're saying, you know, look, this is my butt, I'm going to have the gun, I'm not worried about your law. Those people and criminals are really the only ones that have guns. Skaggs said Peoria's police union hasn't taken a vote to form an official stance, but from talking with other officers, he believes most are in favor of concealed carry. Pappas said he would expect a well-run concealed carry system to create a reduction in crimes against individuals. You think? He finished by saying, in my 34 years of law enforcement, there have been many, many instances that I knew if the victim would have had a weapon to defend themselves, the outcome would have been quite different. You're absolutely right. Of course it would have been different. Bad guys are stupid, but they're not so stupid to just hand their own safety and well-being over to an intended victim if they believe that intended victim may have a gun. Imagine a bad guy comes up to you and he's got a knife. All right? And he tells you, give me all that money you just took out of the ATM. And you end up pulling out a Paul Hogan-looking machete. That's not a knife. That's a knife. And then starts pulling, you know, a Jackie Chan on you. and just absolutely slicing you into pieces the size for a shish kebab. If the bad guy had any clue at all that his knife was going to be met with another knife and he was going to be on the losing end of this deal, there's no way he would ever go after that particular person at that ATM. He'd wait for a weaker victim. Now, let's take out the knives and introduce guns. Bad guy comes up, he's got a gun. Actually, even if he doesn't have a gun, say he's got a knife or a gun, doesn't really matter. And he goes to hold somebody up. That person is able to effectively block the bad guy's gun away as they efficiently and rapidly present their handgun from a concealed position and engage with 2 to 3 rounds to the chest of the bad guy as he struggles to shoot the good guy, the victim, his victim. And he goes down. Bad guy goes down. Intended victim is the victor. From victim to victor in under 1.5 seconds. Do you really think that the bad guy would, having known that, would the bad guy have chosen that person a second time? No, they wouldn't. Armed citizens keep bad guys in check. That is the one thing that they say over and over and over again when in prison that they never wanted to face was an armed citizen. They wanted easy victims. More to come after the break. Stay tuned right here on 2A Radio.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
So, as soon as I'm done with the show today, I got to do a couple little administrative things, upload the today's show onto 2aradio.com for the archives, and I've got to go over to the drugstore and get a passport photo made, because I realized about, I guess in May, mid-May, I realized that my Utah CCW that I've got as a Nevada resident was going to expire sometime over the summertime. So I started to get my stuff together, had a buddy come over last month and notarize the paperwork and get everything done. I'm a notary myself, but I can't obviously notarize my own signature. And then I ended up never sending the paperwork in. I realized my Utah CCW expires a week from today on the 28th. And it's only $10 to renew, but it's got to be in there by the expiration date. So, sitting on my laurels, I realized that on Sunday, and my buddy who's a notary was out of town until yesterday. So, anyhow, he came over last night, got the whole thing notarized up, and now my CCW application is going in. I've got to get my photos done and send it in, so... You know, this is gonna, actually, no, I'm sorry. He had notarized a thing already, and I was under the impression that we needed to do some other thing. I don't remember what the heck. Anyhow, I called him, no, we did notarize. Anyhow, the whole thing is, my Utah CCW expires in a week, and it's usually up to a month to process. It's generally a lot quicker than that, but still, Utah's and every other state that's a shall issue state are bombarded with applications. So I'm going to have, I just won't be traveling out of the state anywhere where I need a Utah CCW to pack. But just, I'm trying to illustrate my own faltering in this by letting you guys know, if you've got CCWs, keep very close tabs on when it expires. And about 2 to 3 months before it expires, get on it. It's usually about a quarter is when they say within, 3 months of it expiring, you can reapply for your new stuff. Please do that. If you've got a PDA or something, like I keep a BlackBerry, put it in future notes, okay, when it expires, and then have it back up a good couple, 60, 90 days maybe, so that you can get it in order, all right? You really want to make sure that you don't let those things lapse. If you do, you're in bad shape, and then you have to deal with the state and pay extra fines, and maybe for a while you won't actually be able to carry, just don't allow that to happen, all right? Just do your very, very best to keep up on it. Because we know that any government, state, local, federal, they're power hungry. They're just looking to have their way with you anyhow. Don't give them any extra reason. Be ahead of the game and don't fall victim to their. I am glad that you spent the day with me today. We're opening up a lot of 10th Amendment related information. We are really looking forward to getting everything 10th Amendment related sewn up in order so that we can preserve our Second Amendment rights as well. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.